This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Good morning, SB Nation AM and SB Nation Radio. Glad you can be with us on a Tuesday morning. It is official now. This is kind of stuff in sports. We know it's coming, but we need a kind of an official day to make it. All right, it's good. We're all good. Phillip Rivers is no longer an L.A. Charger. Those two teams now, his camp and the Chargers have parted ways. And now Phillip Rivers is going to go into free agency. We knew it was coming. It just came official Monday. Now, I've never seen the quarterback situation more fluid than I've ever seen it in the NFL. This is crazy when you look across the landscape of the NFL and you look at where the quarterbacks could be going, maybe staying, maybe heading off into free agency, maybe, heck, even retiring. There are all sorts of possibilities that could come from this offseason in terms of teams changing quarterbacks in a positive way, in a negative way, however you want to put it. And it's kind of interesting because this is one of the positions that usually stays pretty much stagnant. It stays locked in for a long period of time. You get a quarterback, if he's your franchise guy, he's the face of your franchise, you usually keep him around for a while. But we're going to see players like Cam Newton possibly changing teams. We're going to see Drew Brees possibly retire. Tom Brady could be landing in another place. We'll see what the franchise tag, what they do with Dak Prescott in Dallas. There's all sorts of topsy-turviness in the college, in the quarterback role for the NFL. And Phillip Rivers is just another of the latest in the news, parting ways with a team he had been around with for 16 seasons and 14 seasons as the starter. We're going to examine some of the possible landing areas for Phillip Rivers, what makes sense and what doesn't, given his age, given his style of play, what may be best for him late in his career. But also, again, kind of going with this whole umbrella that, yeah, you might be seeing a lot of different faces running teams that you did not expect to see running teams just a couple of years ago. But we all know a couple of things. As time progresses, change is inevitable. And we're seeing that in the quarterback position of the NFL. You want to hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. The Phillip Rivers legacy and his future coming up next as we continue on a Tuesday morning on SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM, as we hit you up on a Tuesday morning. Hey, the long-awaited rematch of heavyweight titans is finally set. One corner, you've got the undefeated WBC champion, one of the hardest-hitting heavyweights in history, Deontay the Bronze Bomber Wilder. And across from him, the undefeated lineal champion, the highly skilled Goliath, who battled his way to the top in Tyson the Gypsy King Fury. Saturday, February 22nd, a historic joint Fox Sports pay-per-view plus ESPN PPV from the MGM Grand Garden Arena in Las Vegas. Wilder Fury 2. It'll come 14 months after their unforgettable and thrilling first fight that saw Wilder retain the title via a split draw. The fight looked nearly over in the 12th round. Wilder sent Fury to the canvas, punctuated by a thundering left hook, but the Gypsy King miraculously rose off the canvas and finished the fight, swinging all the way to the very end. It's one of the most memorable moments in recent heavyweight history, a fight with captivating ebb and flows, capped by an extraordinary final round, make this rematch even more highly anticipated than the first fight. And on February 22nd, these two undefeated warriors will stake their claim as the baddest men on the planet and the best heavyweights in the world. Tickets are on sale now. They can be purchased at MGM mgrand.com or at axs.com, axs.com. The event promoted by Bomb Squad Promotions, TGB Promotions, Top Rank, and Frank Warner Queensberry Promotions, a premier boxing champions presentation. All right, so we're talking about Phillip Rivers this morning. It was made official. He's no longer going to be a Charger. We knew this was coming. It just was made official on Monday. He's heading into free agency, and he's not a young chicken anymore. He came in the same draft class as Eli Manning, who's retiring. He came in the same draft class as Ben Roethlisberger, who probably has a couple of more years left. He has moved his family to Florida. That's why this is not a surprising bit of news, just more of an official bit of news. Here's the thing. His legacy is a little complex, all right, because when I covered the Broncos, I was at every game that they played against the Chargers, and every time Phillip Rivers came to Denver, it's in some of the times fun to watch. I mean, sometimes the Chargers didn't play particularly well. Sometimes they played better than Denver, but he was fun to watch because he really was a swashbuckling quarterback. He was a guy when he said at the end of his press conference in his final game that he really did not care what his statistics said, that he went all out. And if it meant he had three interceptions, it meant he had three interceptions. That was the truth when you watched him play. He was really kind of a guy that was, he played like, and we use this a lot to, we describe Brett Favre in the same way and some other quarterbacks like this. It really looked like he was kind of playing backyard football, right? I know it's a cliche and I know it's often overused, but that's really the best way to describe him. And he did it his way. I mean, he wanted to play football his way, and he did, for the most part, play his way. But this is a chance to sort of finish out your career continuing to play football without having the league say you're done, you're out. He's trying to grab on to the next few years of his career before Father Time says you're finished. Where could that landing spot be? Tampa Bay? Doesn't look like the Buccaneers are all married in on Jameis Winston, and Phillip Rivers could finish out there. Is it possible that he stays in that area, doesn't necessarily play in Florida, but his family relocated there? Could he play in Jacksonville? Could he play in Indianapolis? Could he play in Tennessee, even though the Titans seem to be interested in keeping Ryan Tannehill? But what if Tannehill doesn't agree to the kind of extension the Titans want? The Titans need to franchise Derrick Henry. That's who they need to franchise. They're not going to franchise Tannehill. And if Tannehill goes in another direction, maybe there's an opening for Phillip Rivers in Nashville. I always find it interesting, too. They're talking about his Decatur, Alabama roots, and he's now closer to home. Look, I think Phillip Rivers goes where he can play, right? I think Phillip Rivers needs to, you know, I don't think there's a geographic problem with him. I think it's a landing spot problem. Where is he going to end up going?
Yeah.
Right?
No, I think, he moved his family to Tampa,
I think Pensacola, right?
Pensacola.
Right.
But I think that's a move just for his family.
Yeah, you know, that doesn't mean he's playing in the state of Florida.
You're not going to take your family, I mean, if he gets, I don't know, say Detroit. You know, I'm just throwing that team out there. I know there's no rumor about Detroit. I think he just goes to Detroit.
Yeah, I think he just goes plays wherever he can.
Right.
Right? I mean, he's only going to be there a couple of years anyway. He's going to be close to 40. But I always liked watching Phillip Rivers play, even if I rooted against him while I was
I always liked
covering
Rivers,
the team.
Watching Rivers play.
Of course. But here's the other thing. This
Never
is
liked
a guy,
his throwing style, though.
If you're the Chargers organization, right, if you were the ownership group and you're moving to Los Angeles and you know it stings the entire city of San Diego. You're kind of now an outcast in this city. You're breaking the hearts of every San Diegan that rooted for the Chargers, ever bought any ticket or merchandise or anything. It had to have been very, very difficult for them as an organization to have their starting quarterback not buy into that in any shape or form. Right, he never bought into Los Angeles. He never established roots in Los Angeles. He never committed to Los Angeles. He stayed in San Diego. That's got to be hard from an organization. Now, for us out on the outside, who cares? I mean, but as an organization, that's tough when your quarterback is saying, "Yeah, this is kind of stupid. So stupid, I don't even want to move here. I'm willing to drive back and forth. I have a driver take me back and forth from my San Diego home to Los Angeles because even." And I don't want to do this.
And honestly, that might be a thing for other people in other cities. I'm not sure how you know, forgive me, I'm not sure how far away Foxborough is from where Tom Brady used to live. But maybe it was a similar distance, because I know Foxborough is quite outside Boston.
It's not like it's 3 hours or anything.
But I mean, you might have these superstars who don't live within the vicinity of the city they play in. They might live outside of it just because, you know, bigger house or, you know, property, whatever it might be.
Oh, sure.
And we highlighted that because, like, oh, it's two cities. I mean, literally, it was probably like an hour and a half drive every day.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, which isn't much, but at the same time, there's that sting of no, we were a San Diego team, we're the San Diego Chargers, and no one wanted us to move to LA. No one,
including the starting quarterback of the team.
Yeah,
right. I mean,
but I'm saying even like the NFL was probably just like, whatever, okay.
Well, I still think that the NFL owners really didn't want to lose the San Diego market.
No,
I think they did it
not.
Because an owner always wants the opportunity to move. I don't care how entrenched your team is into the city. Now, we never think the Steelers would ever move or the Cowboys would ever move, and that's not likely. But every owner wants the opportunity to move if the possibility exists and the opportunity is there, and they don't. And so what they're saying is, I'll vote for you if you vote for me if the time ever comes.
Right.
Right. And so they may not like it, you know, but in the end, they're all kind of doing each other a favor. Like, you know, Jerry Jones is never going to leave Dallas, but Shad Khan might leave Jacksonville.
Well, the way they were probably looking at it, too, is, you know, the NFL, what was that after? Was it after Tampa Raiders Super Bowl? That was the one.
Yeah,
that was in San Diego, right?
37, yeah.
Yeah, it was after that Super Bowl where they decided no Super Bowl will be held in San Diego again until they have a new stadium.
Right.
And so there's probably that with the owners, too, saying, you know, well, maybe this move will push them to, you know, we keep flirting with this move. Maybe that'll push them. Because I know they wanted to go back to San Diego for a Super Bowl. It's beautiful.
It's beautiful. It's great. It's a great Super Bowl city.
Yeah, it's a great Super Bowl city.
But also, too, and I think these owners, and this is kind of the dark side of this league, the owners have always tried to leverage their power against civic power in the local governments to get stadiums built. Right. And they're unified in your cause. Right. So like, let's say you want to build a new stadium and you need public funding to build this new stadium. The owners will almost collectively have your back when you make those threats to local government about moving, because they've all been there, too. You know, some owners have gone through the private route to build their cribs, whatever. But if you're looking to get the local government involved, the NFL almost used its collective power. And, you know, we've been saying that for years and years before the Rams moved to Los Angeles, that it was a perfect 20 years for the league to use Los Angeles as a spot to go to, you know, if you are a team that's going to try to fleece your local governments for millions, hundreds of millions of dollars for a new stadium. There's always that opportunity of, well, Los Angeles is sitting out there just untapped. We could go out there, and, you know, and now there's two teams in Los Angeles, so where's the next city that you could, you know, possibly land and go to? Well, you know, if you want to deal with this local governments in San Diego, and it probably not going to work. Oakland, that's not going to work. Maybe St. Louis, right? But that didn't work for Stan Kroenke either, because I think governments are starting to wise up.
And St. Louis has had two teams that live.
Yeah, two teams live, right? Exactly. But I want to get into Philip. I want to get in, because as a Charger fan, and we're going to do this coming up next, because I think it needs a long kind of drawn out segment rather than the last couple of minutes. Give me your idea of the legacy of Philip Rivers. No Super Bowls, but a 14-year starter, a 16-year guy, all within the organization, to seem to have embodied San Diego Chargers ever before he did Los Angeles Chargers. We'll get to that coming up next. Again, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culliver, that's Ron with two N's, or 800-224-2004. It's SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. It's O'Reward Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Let's stop in today for store-wide savings. Earn double O'Reward Bonus Points on all sale items like wiper blades, motor oil, tools, accessories, and more. If you're not an O'Rewards member yet, what are you waiting for? Sign up today online or in the store. Take advantage of Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. It's fast, easy, and free. But hurry, double points are only available for a limited time. O'Reilly Auto Parts, a better price. Better parts, better prices every day. All right, the Philip Rivers legacy. Ron, I think you're probably perfect to put this into some perspective as a fan. As a guy who's really been paying attention to his career, really processing everything he's meant to San Diego and Charger fans everywhere. How does Rivers fit in a landscape of the NFL where we count Super Bowl championships, Super Bowl appearances, for a guy that, you know, was probably one of the more fun quarterbacks to watch, given his swashbuckling style of play?
And, you know, and he was competitive. And it was, he didn't really ever have a bad season in San Diego. And I'm going to call him San Diego from here on out, you guys. Just bear with me. Because, I mean, the two seasons in L.A., he had one good season, one bad season.
Right.
No one showed up to see it. So, you know, he's gonna retire as a San Diego Charger. Everyone's going to think of him as a San Diego Charger. No one's going to think of him as an L.A. Charger. But the legacy part, that's conflicted. I will say it on this. I think he's a Hall of Famer because I think he had a better body of work than Eli Manning, minus the two Super Bowl wins.
I can make that point. If you take the Super Bowl wins out of Manning, which is really at the crux of his Hall of Fame candidacy, yeah. And really that's nobody ever says Eli, you know, when everybody talks about Eli Manning, it's winning those two Super Bowls against the Patriots. That's first and foremost, and that's really all they got.
Yeah.
They don't have the record. They don't have the, maybe statistically there's something there, but it's not. It's nothing else.
I'm going to throw Matt Stafford into this conversation just to kind of make a point. Because Matt Stafford has been a decent quarterback, but I don't think he's going to make it to the Hall of Fame because he's never had any postseason success.
No, I agree.
I mean, maybe he's made the postseason like just once or twice, and that's it. You know, even when he had Calvin Johnson, I mean, the two of them, Calvin Johnson's a Hall of Famer. No doubt in my book. But Stafford was never able to get there. Eli and Stafford, I think, had very similar careers. Where Rivers, he had tremendous success in the regular season. They just fell short a bunch of times in the postseason. And it's kind of it's not really a knock on him. With the fact that you had three juggernaut quarterbacks in the AFC during his reign.
That's an interesting point because this is, we talked about this with, I think last week with Phil Mickelson. Sometimes you just run into the wrong time.
Right.
Right. Sometimes you're playing in the wrong time. And Mickelson, who didn't win a major until he was 33, and then, you know, won a good handful of them, but He never got 12 or 13 majors because he was playing at a time of Tiger Woods. The only problem is I wonder in the NFL how much of that is excusable when you look about the fact that, yeah, he was playing in a conference that had Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers weren't always about Roethlisberger. They were a very, very good defensive front with Dick LeBeau back in those times where they were going to AFC championship games and playing in, you know, deep into the playoffs. And the Patriots, of course, one of the greatest dynasties in all of sports. And you're right. I think there is some level of exception that's going to be given to Rivers' career
And don't forget Peyton.
And Peyton Manning, right. Peyton Manning with both the Colts and the Broncos.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about like three greats of the game.
Right, exactly.
You know, Roethlisberger, I look at this, Roethlisberger and Rivers, I think, were very similar in the way they played, very similar careers. It was just that, you know, I think, obviously, the Steelers' defense helped Roethlisberger out more than the Chargers' defense helped Rivers out.
No doubt.
That was always a weak point for years and years. I mean, for a while, I mean, remember that offense the Chargers had? I mean, you had Antonio Gates, LaDainian Tomlinson, Vincent Jackson.
Right.
You had a core group. You had an offense that was stacked. I mean, Antonio Gates is definitely a first ballot Hall of Famer. LaDainian's already in. Vincent Jackson, so many wide receivers now, you kind of get lost in the shuffle. But you had all the pieces you needed to win a Super Bowl. You just didn't have a defense that could help you get there as well. It was a good defense, but I think Rivers helped you out more than the defense helped out. Versus when Roethlisberger was, you know, made those Super Bowl runs, he had a defense that, you know, any defensive coordinator would salivate over.
Yeah, and he was he was kind of a hated guy in the way that you hate an athlete, but secretly you respect him.
Yeah.
I think that was a lot of people who watched him play. There was, people said they didn't like the brashness. He was very cocky, and he did a lot of things. You know, he would. I never forget the playoff game against the Colts when they beat Indianapolis. I think in like 2007 or 2008, one of those years, where he was leaving, and I think he was hurt, and he was going back to the locker room to get checked out. He was clapping to the Indianapolis fans who were giving him a hard time. He loved being that villain on the road. He loved having that animosity. He fed off of it. Saw it every time they came to town. Saw it every time they came to Denver, how much people hated him. But at the same time, like, man, he was really fun to watch. He was a guy that you really secretly, no matter what his team was, if his team was depleted in certain areas, you got a little worried, because sometimes that swashbuckling really paid off and made games a lot closer than they should in years that they did struggle. But when they didn't struggle, he was a problem. He was a problem for a lot of teams, because he put the ball up in the air, and he was like, I got guys who will go get it, but you know what? I'll also throw a pick, but I'll come right back at you the next time I have this. If you think intercepting me twice in a game is going to have my mindset nervous or worried, I couldn't care less. I'm flinging this thing all over the place, and I will. And I will move this team downfield come hell or high water, and I'm not scared of your defense, even if you've deterred me at any point during the game. That's the kind of respect I've always liked about him. Like, not every quarterback is a swashbuckling quarterback. Not every quarterback will draw up plays and get his guys to run different routes at the last second because he just feels like this is where the game should be going. But at the same time, it might not have been the best strategic way to play when it came to playing in the postseason, where turnovers really do hurt you. But my God, he was fun. And you know what? You can go back to the Broncos teams that were really good under Manning. And there was one postseason where I thought the Chargers had a very good chance. The Chargers were going into that playoffs, I want to say 2014 or 15. Well, they were really dangerous, really dangerous. And I was like, if you're Denver, I don't think you want to play a division rival that knows you really well, that's got the confidence of Philip Rivers behind him, because they had beaten him during the regular season. And he almost pulled it out. I mean, they almost pulled it out. And it's just, you know, he was that kind of player. Unfortunately, and this is where I worry about time, where legacy gets kind of throttled down a bit, is that he could be lost in the memory banks of fans.
Yep.
as the years go by, because he just doesn't have that Super Bowl presence. You make the statement about Marino all the time. He never won a Super Bowl, but he did get there. And we do sort of go, okay, maybe he didn't win, but you did get there. Rivers, he probably could have used one trip to the Super Bowl to lock him in a little bit more than he's going to be in 10, 15 years.
Unfortunately, the closest they ever came, too many injuries happened.
Too many injuries.
The game before. And
yep.
What are you going to do?
But he's also had really good teams that I thought were Super Bowl favorites and did not capitalize on it. Right? I mean, look, last year's team was a, not last year's team, the year before, I thought it was an outstanding football team. And
it was.
It was a quiet team. We kept talking about it all season.
Nobody watched.
And they were what, 12-4? Right behind Kansas City?
Yeah.
Breathing down the Chiefs' neck the whole way through the season. Almost had the number one seed in the AFC. And then had to go in a wild card game and play Lamar Jackson and the Ravens, which they won. And then got throttled by the Patriots. And that was a team they just couldn't beat in the postseason, whether it was at home or in Foxborough. They just could not beat New England in the postseason. But, you know, it's...
And I think that's what, you know, I mean, I hope that's taken in consideration. Because I think he is Hall of Fame worthy.
I do too.
You know, when you look at the Hall of Fame, it's, you know, which players defined an era? And I think you can't, you know, Philip Rivers defined an era. I mean, he was one of the top five quarterbacks coming out of the AFC from, like, 2000 on. You know, you had that juggernaut of three quarterbacks. Because when you remember, we always point to this. It wasn't until this year that we had a different quarterback playing in the Super Bowl.
Right. That's right.
Since, what, 2001?
Yeah,
it was 2006, right?
It was, yeah.
But 2005?
Yep.
2006. I mean, we haven't had a, the Joe Flacco was the outlier.
Is the outlier. And it, right, you're talking about some of the greatest collection of quarterback talent in the AFC, and he was trying to fight that tooth and nail. It's going to be interesting where he lands. There are some opportunities.
But
Indianapolis might be looking for a guy who worked with Frank Reich. I mean,
you have to do the Eli Manning comparison. I mean, take the two Super Bowls away from Eli Manning. Who had a better career?
Yeah, good point. Good point. All right. Major League Baseball is thinking about changing up its postseason. It might be huge. It could be fun, but it could be very gimmicky. What are they talking about next, SB Nation AM?
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Glad you could be with us, SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio. You've been hearing me talk about our exclusive sports betting partners, BetOnline, for a while now. Basketball season's in full swing, both college and the NBA, and you can get into all the action. You can sign up today at BetOnline and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit, and you can start betting college and pro sports. Every spread, every total, every winner or loser, those proposition bets are on the table, like who's going to win the NBA MVP. Get the fastest to market odds updates and payouts with our new sportsbook partners, BetOnline. You know, the tournament's coming up next month. Head on over to the website today. Use your mobile device, join, and use the promo code SBNation55, SBNation55, to receive that 50% welcome bonus. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. All right, Major League Baseball is getting all radical on us. There's a proposal, and it's being heavily discussed, according to sources, which is, I think, the added caveat when they say it's heavily discussed, not just discussed, heavily discussed, the possibility of changing its playoff format. Now, listen, they're not just adding teams. They're adding a whole new ball of wax to this thing. Baseball's in a little bit trouble. Attendance is down. Viewers are down. They need to try to do something to spice it back up again. People like the playoffs, and so Major League Baseball knows this, and so they're trying to make something different in the postseason. So here's what they're doing, and this is kind of smart, but it also is very, very gimmicky. So here's the warning. If you're not into gimmicky, this might not be your thing. But if you're into some sort of radical change, then this might be something baseball will end up doing because it solves a lot of problems that they're having, which I'll get to in a minute. Joel Sherman writes brilliantly about this. If you're looking for a place to kind of read up on all the nitty-gritty details, Joel Sherman in the New York Post has it all laid out nicely. So here's where Major League Baseball wants to do. They want to expand the playoffs to 7 teams in each league. All right. So they're basically adding 2 more teams. They're going to basically creating another wild card round, but that's not really what they're doing. Here's how they want to do it. So you've got 7 teams in the American League, let's say, and the team with the best record in the American League is going to go right to the division series. The other 6 teams, the other 2 division winners, and then the other 4 wild card teams are all going to be pooled together to play in a best of 3 all in one location opening round playoff series. All right. So right now we have the 1-game wild card between the 2 wild card teams to join the other 3 divisional winners. That's the way we're doing it now. 5 teams in each league and this 1-game wild card to then get it down to 4. Well, baseball wants to make it 7 with 3 games going on. But instead of those 1-game wild cards, they're going to be best 2 out of 3, but in one location, no travel. Right. That's going to leave 3 winners coming out of that to the divisional series. Now, here's where it gets gimmicky. The team with the number 1 overall seed that didn't have to play in that 3-game series that got the bye to the divisional round, of the 3 teams that are left, that team gets to choose which team they're going to play in the AL or NLDS. And that's going to be on live television. So you'd have the Yankees, let's say, sitting in the driver's seat in the divisional series. Let's say you have Cleveland, the Astros, and the Red Sox all emerging from their 3-game series with their other teams that were participating in the postseason. And the Yankees on live TV would say, we want the Red Sox in the divisional series, or we want the Indians in the divisional series. And the same would go on in the National League. Now, this does a couple of things. Right? One, it increases team participation in the postseason. Okay, now let's think about this for a second. We all know how that baseball is a marathon, not a sprint, right? It's 162 games. It's 6 months. It's a long season. Baseball teams internally have a projection. They use all sorts of computer models to project how many wins are realistic given their roster, their payroll, etc. Now, let's say you're a GM, and Joel Sherman points this out. Let's say you're a GM that has projected his team to win 81 games, all right? Well, now you're in a different mindset, whereas at the trade deadline, you might not be all in, or you might be less likely to gamble because 81 wins will probably not likely get you a wild card postseason, right? If that's where your trajectory is heading, it's late July. You know your roster, you know your team, you know you got your pitching maybe a little bit struggling, and yeah, 81 wins is probably where we're going to finish up, give or take a couple games. You might be more bold to go, hey, look, let's go get those extra 4 or 5 wins to make a run at one of these wild card games. And because it's not a one game do or die thing, we might have a good shot at this. We might have a good shot at getting to the ALDS, right? Whatever, right? And all now you're talking about more teams being involved, more fan bases having conversations in their local markets about their team's viability towards the postseason. And also, it does something for the television partners, which is gives you more games. And also, one of the things I love about baseball that is just nowhere in the regular season because of the lack of urgency a lot of times in regular season games is that in a best of three series, it gives you a lot of clinching opportunities to see teams get it all in that particular game, right? Is it too gimmicky? Yeah, it is. The live TV thing is a little bizarre. But at the same time, think how bold baseball has to be to acknowledge they've got some problems, and this might actually be a solution. I don't necessarily hate it, because again, if you remember my conversation from the fall, I was a guy who thought the one-game wildcard thing was a mess. I thought it was dumb. I thought it was stupid. I didn't think it was needed. But I changed my mind when I saw it implemented. Once I saw it and I saw the excitement of it, I went, okay, I was wrong. This actually does work. I actually like this.
Yeah, but the only thing wrong about the wild card right now is that it's one game.
One game, right.
And you could just have a bad day, and that right. And that sums up your postseason.
But I think that my assessment of the wild card, the addition of the wild card, was more of an old school thinking of baseball, right? Okay. I didn't want the expansion of the playoffs. But you're right about the one game. The problem with the one game has always been, okay, but now we get this, we get in, and then one game, one bad outing, and we're out. Where a best of three at least leaves you a little breathing room. All right, we just got to tie this thing up or what, you know, whatever. But I think there's look, I personally like it when seven game series, and which I'm not a vested member of, I'm just watching it for entertainment. I like it when a best of seven series gets to 2-2. Cuz now I'm like, great, best 2 out of 3. Good. This is great. We've narrowed this down to best 2 out of 3. Fantastic. Whoever wins this next game in game 5, they're going to be in the driver's seat. The other team's back to the wall, right? That's what I like, right? I mean, they have a chance to win this thing. The other team's got to win the next 2. I kind of think this might be a cool thing to have. I mean, I kind of like it.
I'm liking it, too. I think it's probably one of the smarter radical decisions baseball's had besides using robotic umpires.
And also, exactly. This pick your opponent thing. I mean, I don't know how it's going to go over with people, but
the picking the opponent thing is that just reserved for the top seed overall.
Top seed overall.
So if we look at last year, I was looking at last year's standings. All right, in the American League, you had the Astros were number one overall.
Right.
So then they could choose between, and then everyone else is kind of paired up like the number two seed versus the lowest ranked.
Yeah, basically, you had the seven seeds. You'd have 2, 7, so 3, 6, 4, 5.
Right. So the Astros would have their pick of either facing the winner of Yankees Red Sox. That would have been round one.
Right.
Which that's a appetizing matchup right there. Twins, Indians, Rays, A's.
Yep.
So then they could choose which one they wanted to slot themselves over, right?
Yeah. Once the series is over.
Yeah.
So they get to evaluate where those teams are. Now, this makes it
interesting. But it's not beforehand. They can do it when the series is over.
When the series is over. So the Yankees or the Astros, in your example, the Astros would be sitting by themselves, and then all those series would play out, and that would leave you with three winners.
Yeah, but what
then the Astros could then say, we want the Yankees.
Wouldn't they make, is it best of three?
Yeah, the first round would be best
full,
of three.
Or is it a full three-game series? Well, it doesn't really matter.
It's a best of three.
Best of three. So then you would choose, you would probably, if you're the Astros, you would go, okay, well, which team went three?
Yeah. What if you had a team that played two massive extra inning games and their bullpens are rattled, right? I mean, there's all sorts of scenarios you can go with. Star player got hurt. They used their star pitcher in game one and used him in relief in game three, right? And so, you know, his arm is a little depleted going into the divisional series. I mean, think of all the baseball strategic scenarios that would be at play for a general manager in an organization and a manager to be having discussions about who they play next. Would you want to play a team that blasts through the best of three series in two easy games where they hit six home runs and scored 14 runs combined and just dominated? Maybe not. Maybe you take the team that had to go full three games and depleted their pitching staff a little bit. Whatever, right? Or maybe you're looking through the analytics and you're saying to yourself, look, I know that one team just cooked right through this divisional series, but our analytics, our computer models has shown we are better against them than any of the other two opponents. Mm-hmm. Our left-handers constantly get out there right-handed batters all season. In the six games we played or the eight games we played, whatever it is, we feel statistically that's better. We know it doesn't look good because they just blasted their way through, but trust us, our computer models say that's the best opponent for us. There's all sorts of cool conversations we can have.
Well, like you hinted towards it too, I think it makes the MLB trade deadline a lot more interesting
when you have more
teams in the mix, because I chose the next two teams that were out the outside looking in. You have the Rangers and White Sox. Now you have those two teams also going, guys, you know, we can make a play here.
Yeah,
Maybe we can squeak into that seven seed or that six seed if we just pick up an extra pitcher, if we pick up an extra batter. And so you have a lot more people, a lot more teams vying for positioning.
But on the flip side of this, right, it's gimmicky.
It is.
And that is you're going to have a lot of people going, I don't know about this. Just something doesn't feel right about this.
Well, I mean, we've already had one person, an outspoken pitcher, come out and just say Rob Manfred doesn't know the game of baseball.
Sure, right?
Trevor Bauer.
And here's the thing. This is what plagues the other playoffs, right? Which is, boy, if everybody gets in, nobody is, right? I mean, look, what's the point? If the answer is just to expand it, why don't you just let everybody in the postseason then? Maybe that'll solve all your problems.
But
how many more teams are you going to have to add? If you keep telling us there's no interest, wild card was supposed to fix that. Now it's not fixing that? Now you need to add more teams? All right, when is it going to go to 9? When is it going to go to 12? When is it going to go to 15 per league before this thing is done, right? Like, what, you know... When is it going to go to everybody? Why don't we just play a round-robin NCAA-style tournament?
But when it comes to MLB, though, I mean, it's so limited the amount of teams that get in anyways. You're only talking about four teams that really are five teams that get in.
Yeah, five teams that get in, right?
And for two of the teams, or for one of the teams, they only get one shot.
Right, but if you expand this to seven, there's 15 teams per league. You're talking about nearly 50% of your league making the playoffs.
Yeah, and that's the other problem, too, because when you look at, say, when I was looking at the American League just as their model, the Rangers, the Rangers and White Sox, they had below 500 records.
Right.
You know, if you go over to the National League, the top two or the final two or the first two out, so to speak, using March Madness terms, they both had 500 records. But you're talking, I mean, just barely over 500.
This is what plagues the NBA.
With losing records. The only thing I think is really too gimmicky might be the live TV.
Picking your opponent just doesn't seem like something we accept in sports.
Yeah.
We don't get to choose who we play. The way it plays out.
Yeah.
All right, we'll get to your Twitter comments on this. If you want to chime in, @TonyDRadio, @RonCulver, Ron with two N's. As we continue along on SB Nation AM, too gimmicky or just right for Major League Baseball? Hit us up on Twitter or 800-224-2004, SB Nation AM.
listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, this hour of SB Nation Radio presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Frankenberry, just what baseball needed. Even more five-hour games. More gimmicky than Booberry.
Come on, Frankenberry. Come on, Frankenberry.
More gimmicky than Booberry. That's funny. He's, you know what, he is right there.
Frankenberry, the gimmicky cereal. Let's be
real. Yeah, well, it's supposed to be the strawberry flavored stuff. Ridiculous. He is right though. Those playoff games are going to go a long time, man.
Yeah, and you could have three of them.
You could have three of them. Baseball in the postseason is like a whole different game, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, we don't complain about time then.
No.
During the regular season, I mean, we would all want two and a half hour games during the regular season. So
can
just
you imagine?
Cap it off right there.
Like, when you watch an NFL game in the playoffs and you watch an NFL game in the regular season, it's the same thing, right? It's the same strategic element to it. Can you imagine if every Major League Baseball game was managed and ran like it was in the postseason? The game would be dead today. If you went to a game
in
July...
Some games might still be going.
Right, exactly. If you went to a game in July and the managers of both teams treated it like it was Game 7 of the World Series, like everything but the kitchen sink, right? Like, you would go crazy if that was every night at the ballpark. You would have to have
a new radical change, which is allowing in-game call-ups.
Yeah, right, right. Exactly. Because, man, sometimes you go, like, you watch a playoff game and it's in the sixth inning, and then you go, like, run an errand, and you come back, and you've been gone, like, an hour and a half, and it's like, why is it only the seventh inning? What happened? What's going on in this game that I was gone forever, and they played an inning of baseball? Yeah, that's what you're getting in October. A lot of that.